Welcome to NGA Notable Lectures, a podcast offering a deeper understanding of all things artistic. Archibald Motley Jr.'s paintings of African-American subjects underwent drastic changes in style and reception during the artist's long lifetime. After including Motley's paintings in his Two Centuries of Black American Art exhibition at the Los Angeles County Museum of Art in 1976, David Driskell visited Motley at his home in 1979 and 1980, speaking at the second annual John Wilmerding Symposium on American Art held on March 23, 2018, at the National Gallery of Art. David Driskell presents his recollections of those conversations, as well as other impressions of Motley's work formed during Driskell's career as an art historian and curator. The John Wilmerding Symposium on American Art is made possible by a grant from the Walton Family Foundation.
We are especially fortunate to have with us today David Driskell, who did engage Archibald Motley in conversations about his art, beginning in 1975, when he asked the artist if he could borrow Portrait of My Grandmother and three additional works for his landmark exhibition, Two Centuries of Black American Art. David has very kindly agreed to share recollections of those conversations with us today. Please join me in welcoming artist, scholar, curator, and longtime friend of the National Gallery, David Driskell.
Thank you, Dr. Anderson, for the warm words of introduction. And thank you, ladies and gentlemen, for coming out for this event. And indeed, this will be simply a sharing of some of the information that transpired, or the conversation between Archibald Motley Jr. and myself on a couple of visits just prior to his passing on, 1980. I recall when Dr. Richard Powell was putting together that wonderful exhibition on Motley that he did at the National Museum, traveled around different places a few years back. And he said to me, I'd like to have you participate with us in this exhibition. And I said, well, I'm not a Motley scholar. What can I do or what can I say? And he laughed and he said, well, David, you're one of the few people left who knew him. So I didn't know him personally so much as having the chance, of course, to meet him a couple of times. So one of the advantages of being called an octogenarian and being only 3 years away from being 90 years old is that I have had the good fortune of living during a period of time when my life intersected with that of a number of major figures in American art, some of whom I had the good fortune of meeting and conversing with, and some I interacted with in meaningful dialogue deserving of historical note. Salient among these notables were Georgia O'Keeffe, that I had the pleasure of meeting and conversing with from time to time, as she was a donor to the Fisk University Art Gallery, where she donated 101 works for the Alfred Stieglitz collection there. I had the good fortune, as a student at Howard University in the 1950s, of meeting museum founder Duncan Phillips, of a number of artists, of course, conferring with, like Aaron Douglas, Morris Lewis, who was my teacher at Howard University, and most people don't know that he taught at Howard in the 1950s. Having had the chance to serve on the board of governors at the Skowhegan School with Louise Nevelson, and to be mentored by Romare Bearden. And certainly I considered it a pleasure to have had a chance to meet and converse briefly with Archibald Motley Jr. All of these people now we look at having made important contributions to select aspects of American modernism. So in a brief and concise manner, I just wish to share with you some notes regarding the conversation that I had with Mr. Motley late in his life. We've had a wonderful account of who he was as a portrait painter and what have you from Dr. Anderson, so it's not necessary for me to recount some of those ideas. But Motley lived and enjoyed a normal and fruitful life filled with creative experiences, the likes of which seldom were all but uncommon among Black artists of his generations, as most of them were born only a few decades after the abolition of American slavery. And so Motley revealed to me that even when he took odd jobs painting curtains and drapery in a commercial shop in Chicago in the late 1920s and 1930s, that he still felt art-centered. And he said he would return home to his easel in the evening and create people-centered paintings until the late hours of the morning. Now, early on as a student, he enjoyed a measure of acceptance in an all-white cultural environment at the School of the Art Institute of Chicago, at times being the only person of color in the class, in his class. Importantly, from the very beginning of his long career as an artist, Motley considered himself a painter of people, a portrait painter. People who he had, and I quote, he said, the widest range of color, end of color. And he said he concentrated principally on painting people of color because they were closest to him. They were the people he knew. During visits with the artist, when I discussed with him the range of skin colors in his compositions and the physical anatomy of some of the characters that showed certain stylistic definitions of racial types, Motley was steadfast in explaining to me how he saw only a rainbow of colors. He did not consider himself poking fun at anyone, as one writer had suggested. He said there was this very beautiful, genuine interest that he had, and he considered it an exciting one based in the folk ways and the differences within the Black race. To him, these were not stereotypical depictions of a racial nature at all. They were the people he knew best in historic Bronzeville in Southside Chicago. And he observed that much of the uniqueness of character that he bestowed upon his subjects came from an innate, and I would quote, an innate desire to capture the spiritual essence of his subject, end of quote. He noted that by visually observing the special characteristics that defined a person, one could visually describe personality and individual character in a very special way. Now, my interest in Motley's art began in the early 1950s when I worked as a student assistant for art gallerists Alonzo Aiden and James V. Heron at the Barnett Aiden Gallery in Washington, D.C. at 127 Randolph Place Northwest in Washington. On a daily basis, I saw Motley's painting, The Argument, 1940. It was there among the numerous works that were part of the permanent collection of that gallery. I had recently changed my major from history at Howard University to art practice and art history. So I did not become that excited about knowing who the painter was until my junior year in 1953, when I began working as a student curator with Mr. Albert J. Carter at the Howard University Gallery of Art. Then the painter, Archibald Motley, caught my attention more, and I began to see him as an artist that I would like to learn more about. Excuse me. By 1953, I had begun studying African American art history with Professor James A. Porter at Howard, and Motley figured prominently in the review of contemporary artists we were studying. But perhaps more important was the display of three of Motley's paintings, from the 1930s that were on permanent display in the art seminar classroom actually, where we were taught art history. This was in the ground floor of Founders Library at Howard University. And so each day we saw, when we went to class, we saw Motley's Barbecue, 1935, Saturday Night, also 1935, and The Liar, 1936. They were all prominently displayed on the walls of the art seminar room, along with paintings by Elzia Carter and a few other well-known African-American artists. However, it would be two decades later before I began corresponding with Motley in the summers of 1974 and 75, upon becoming a guest curator at the Los Angeles County Museum of Art for their bicentennial exhibition, Two Centuries of Black American Art, 1750 to 1950. I had been introduced to Motley 2 years earlier in 1972, personally, by artist and museum director Margaret Burroughs at a session of the National Conference of Artists, which convened in Chicago in the spring of 1972. Motley was honored that year by the National Conference of Artists, and he had recently returned from Cuernavaca, Mexico, having visited his nephew, Willard Motley, the writer. And it was during the course of our correspondences between 1974 and 1976 that I requested the loans of Brunsville at Night for the Two Centuries exhibition, for Brown Girl at the Bath, for Stomp, and for the portrait of my grandmother that you just saw. These were to be a part of the exhibition format of Two Centuries. Now, when I talked by phone with Mr. Motley in 1975, he was clear on his intentions to lend the works for the exhibition, but he wanted to know the names of other artists being considered for the showing as well. He noted that it was very important to know who his co-exhibitors were and where the works would be shown. I assured him that he would be in good company respected colleagues such as Romare Bearden, Jacob Lawrence, James A. Porter, Elizabeth Catlett, Selma Burke, Margaret Burroughs, Charles White, among others. And I noted that the exhibition was scheduled to open at the Los Angeles County Museum of Art in the fall of 1976 and travel to the High Museum of Art in Atlanta that winter, to the Dallas Museum of Art in the spring of 1977, and to the Brooklyn Museum in the summer of 1977. Well, he seemed impressed that the works would be at reputable institutions, and he agreed, of course, to lend the works. He then asked if I planned to include mending socks in the exhibition, to which I said yes. And so he went on to describe mending socks as having given him the chance to celebrate the love that he had for a pioneering member of his family, his grandmother, who was responsible in great measure for his positive outlook on life. And then he shared with me what he considered to be special information I should know about how he arrived at certain techniques of painting from dark to light in the chiaroscuro manner, rendering light in a particular way when painting the human figure. He told me of how he could clearly define three-dimensional form with this method of painting, as did the painters of the Italian Renaissance. Now, even though I was calling about a loan of certain works for the Two Centuries of Black American Art exhibition, Mr. Motley took time to advise me about how artists of his generation had paved the way for those of us who are now enjoying a measure of success as a result of the time and energy that he and others had given to the field. He noted that in the words I'm adding to this, in the words of the African-American spiritual, the road hadn't been easy. I agreed with him, and it seemed to be immediately that I would gain his trust. I was equally curious to engage Mr. Motley in conversation about his assessment of the Black arts movement of the 1960s. But he seemed to show little interest in such a subject, particularly in the one that I brought up about the Wall of Respect in Chicago, which had become a topic of great interest and had been attributed to some of the members of a group that would later be called the Afro-Cobra School, or the Afro-Cobra Movement. An important part of our conversation centered on my choice of certain works of art for the Two Centuries exhibition. And I explained that I wanted from him a selection of paintings that crossed a range of time in his production, as well as a selection that showed his mastery of portraiture, his mastery of genre scenes, and particular aspects of Black life as he had seen it in urban Chicago in the heyday of what had been called the Chicago Renaissance. Well, the mention of the term Chicago Renaissance provided Motley with a chance to inform me that he was not certain there was such a thing as a Renaissance in Chicago in the late 1920s and early 1930s. But the personal jewel in the conversation, and I didn't argue with him about it, was that Motley was not sure that there was even a Harlem Renaissance. I immediately directed his attention away from that discussion, as I wanted to pin down the loan of the works and what have you, and I didn't want to get an answer of no from him in that regard. And we went back to the nature of the Two Centuries of Black American Art exhibition, and we had a very robust discussion about what I had envisioned this exhibition to do, to be, and the mission was to be part and parcel of the American canon, not a separate entity to itself, but an expansion of the field, indicating that we were concerned with the paucity of literature in the subject and the omissions. And of course, he lauded me on wishing to show his work in that regard, in particular, mending socks, the portrait of his grandmother, and the portrait of his grandmother. as he felt that they showed him at his very best as a portrait artist, one who painted the inner vision of someone, in this case, as I said, his grandmother, who had helped instill in him those larger values in life, such as productive manhood, self-esteem, and racial pride, all rooted in his American, and he emphasized his African and American Indian culture. Portrait of My Grandmother, which is an important work now highly lauded here at the National Gallery of Art, was painted, as you heard, in 1922 to celebrate his family tie. But it also celebrated the beauty, the wisdom that he saw in his own family, the strength that was there, thereby showing a pronounced dignity that related to family pride and ancestral legacies. When we see the two works side by side, we recognize immediately that the 1922 work represents saliently an image of a sage, a person whose years are gracefully recorded upon the forward look of maturity, motherhood, and feminist strength. She is the matriarch of the family, the keeper of familial culture, and a preserver of both worldly and spiritual essences. Portrait of My Grandmother is simply rendered in the format of, as I said earlier, the chiaroscuro painting method in a limited palette of burnt umbers and raw sienna, two earth colors closely associated with the classical depiction of il colore nero in the Italian. Now, during my visit to the artist's home and studio in 1977, I inquired about the symbolism of color as shown in so many of the paintings of people in Motley's work. His grandmother, he explained, was a Creole woman, one whose descendancy was threefold: African, Native American, he used the term Indian, and European. At no single time during our discussion did he refer to the racial identity of any of his subjects as being white. Yet, a hint at all of these important racial and ancestral qualities can be readily seen in Mending Socks, the same subject, as I said, painted 2 years later, Mending Socks, painted 2 years after Portrait of My Grandmother. Now, the portrait of my grandmother has been beautifully described by Dr. Anderson, so I won't go into any great detail there, but in Mending Socks, I asked about some of the symbolism there, and to a certain extent, I would say there are a world of differences in these works, because he said he was getting before the viewer a number of things that he wanted to include in this kind of ancestral legacy. And you see, of course, Christianity, you see the Native American rug on the table, the fruit in the compote, indicating that she, of course, had lived a very beautiful and fruitful life. And the books, of course, indicating that she, though born a slave, was well-versed and loved literature. She loved the Bible and so forth. And the glass being almost empty, an indication that she was nearing the end of her life on earth. There were other aspects of that which we need not go into. But it wasn't a painting that he did just saying, well, I'll put together a still life table grouping and what have you. There were deliberate aspects of symbology there that relate very much to what he was trying to show us in this composite life. Now, returning to my securing the loans of the Two Centuries exhibition, in 1975. It would then be another 2 years before I began, again, made contact with the artist. So in early January 1977, I called upon Mr. Motley and asked if I could arrange to come out for a visit to his studio. And he asked what was the nature of my visit, and I discreetly told him that I was coming in connection with a curatorial assignment I had to add his work to a private collection. So I arrived at his home on January 14th, 1977, accompanied by his son, Archie Motley, after I had had a brief time conferring with him in his office at the Chicago Historical Society. So Archie made certain that our reintroduction had gone well, and he left the two of us alone to transact the sale for which I had come. A large section of works was neatly stacked against the wall of a room adjacent to the small living room. This room, I thought, was about 12 by 12 inside, and this was the artist's studio, and it was close by his small kitchen. When I went to visit artists during that period of time, very often I didn't have a camera. I did have a Polaroid camera with me in this case. And I would do little sketches to remind myself of what I had seen. And I was only allowed to shoot two Polaroids of the works that I purchased for the client, Bronzeville at Night and Stomp. I still have those photographs in the registration file for those works in the curatorial book. And one of the most memorable aspects of our conversation centered on another work that remained on an easel in front of us. It had a long and all but incomprehensible title. It was called "He Amongst You Who Is Without Sin Shall Cast the First Stone. Forgive them, Father, for they know not what they do." And he had started working on that painting in 1963. And he said he wasn't sure that he had finished it even at that time. He tried to entice me to have the client become interested in that work, and I knew that it wouldn't work, so I didn't. I really didn't think that it was a major work, but he did. So I traveled to Chicago again in the fall of 1979 to see Mr. Motley and to look at additional works in his possession. But we did not settle on any purchase of the client for the client at that time. He noted that his prices had increased measurably and that he was still actively involved in painting as often as he felt the urge to do so. And it was interesting because I think he had forgotten that I was the person who had come and bought the work a little earlier. And he said to me, "I sold so and so for such and such a price." And I was like, "Oh." And so his work had increased in value, and museums were making inquiries, but to my knowledge, they were not really racing out to buy his work at that time. Then lastly, I was invited to the school of the Art Institute of Chicago in the spring of 1979. To deliver the commencement address there. I was invited by Dr. Don Irvin, who was the president of the school. And they were offering Mr. Motley an honorary Doctor of Fine Arts degree. And I recall having called him and said, "I look forward to seeing you," and so forth and so on. And he said, "Regrettably, I'm too ill to come, and someone will be accepting on my behalf." And that was the very last conversation I had with him. I very often when I go to visit artists, when I have the pleasure of conferring with them from time to time. Now we have instant cameras, you know, your phone and things like that. You can take pictures immediately. I regret that I was not able to make more photographs of the setting and what have you. I just wanted to say thank you to the National Gallery of Art for allowing me to share these personal notes with you. And I was saying as I came in this morning, this is a very special time for me here at the gallery, because it was actually 50 years ago this spring that I delivered my first lecture here at the National Gallery of Art. Thank you.
This has been a National Gallery of Art podcast.